Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Court Finance here at Zex. I'm your host, Ben Rains. And this week we have another soccer-themed episode for you because we had some big news come out involving North America and the World Cup right before this World Cup kicked off last Thursday. And then we're also going to dive back into a little bit of sports betting news. But before we do any of that, I just want to say if you have any questions or episode suggestions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zex.com. Because like I've said before, we always appreciate feedback or any thoughts about what we could do or something we haven't covered before. But now I want to get into today's topic. So last Thursday, the World Cup kicked off in Russia. Russia actually ended up winning the first game versus Saudi Arabia 5-0. So that was crazy. But Saudi Arabia was actually the least favored team. They had the worst odds to win. So that makes sense. But I don't want to talk about the scores or anything like that. It was the first time, though, the Americans haven't been in the World Cup since 1986. But then on the eve of the World Cup, there was some big news that should make a lot of American soccer fans and North American soccer fans really happy, is that the World Cup is coming back to the U.S. for the first time since 1994. And I mentioned that possibility last week at the end of my World Cup preview, but I don't want to get too ahead of myself because FIFA is a notoriously pretty corrupt organization. So even though the North American bid looked pretty good and clearly it seemed better than their competitor, you never know. And so, like I said, it was a joint bid. It's the United States, Canada, and Mexico are going to host it all together. It's the first time three countries have hosted one World Cup. And they beat out Morocco 134-65. That's how the voting went. So the 2026 World Cup is coming to North America. And the reason, besides that the infrastructure here is more stable and in place than in Morocco, is the money. And FIFA makes 90% of its money from the World Cup, so it's pretty simple why they want to come. It's expected to generate about $14 billion, $11 billion in profits for FIFA, and Morocco's bid was not even going to offer half of that. So that's pretty clear why they're coming here. And some of the clear winners right away for, besides the American fans, are so Fox and Spanish-language network Telemundo, which is owned by NBC Universal. They have the rights to this World Cup and the 2022 World Cup, paying about $1 billion combined for those two cycles back in 2011. But then somewhat quietly and somewhat shadily, FIFA awarded Fox and Telemundo the rights to the 2026 World Cup in 2015 without opening up the bidding, which is pretty unprecedented. It had ESPN pretty upset because they were hoping after they lost out for this, that 8-year period, they would get it back. So other networks are pretty mad. And Fox only paid about 10% more than its current contract, which seems pretty crazy when you think that live sports rights are only going to go up. I mean, just last week, the former ESPN president said at this conference that, and a bunch of other people have reiterated this point, as have I on this podcast, is that he specifically said, I don't see TV rights deals for sports going down anytime soon. So it makes you wonder why FIFA would take a lower bid when they didn't even know who was hosting the World Cup in 2015, and they could have clearly gotten more money, especially when they found out North America was hosting it. But the reason here is pretty simple as well again. So the 2022 World Cup is going to be in Qatar, but it's so hot there in the summer, upwards of 120 degrees, that they're going to have to play the World Cup in the fall or the winter, which they never do, which will then interrupt all of the soccer players and the international players' domestic leagues. So it's going to be very strange. But it's also directly impacting Fox because that's in the heart of the NFL season, in the heart of other programming. So what FIFA was worried about is that Fox was going to sue them and just say, this, all of a sudden now the World Cup is in the middle of the fall. That's not what we agreed to. We didn't pay you $425 million to broadcast the World Cup in the fall. So they now have three World Cups in a row. And it's a big deal because this will also be, in 2026, the first time there are 48 teams in the World Cup, up from 32. So U.S. soccer fans, pretty good chance we're in it. And also, not 100% sure about this with the new 48-team layout is the host country always gets in automatically. That's why Russia was in this year. So the fact that the United States is hosting it, we'll be in it, so you don't have to worry about the United States not being in it. But the good thing for Fox and Telemundo is that all the games can be in prime time, live. And in 8 years from now, in the middle of the summer, that might be the only thing anyone is watching live on television for a month long. So Fox is really pumped for that, I'm sure. And so are FIFA's advertising partners and marketing partners. And those are the big companies I've mentioned before and that you've heard of, because they've been involved directly with FIFA for a long time. Because you reach 200 countries, you reach billions of people. So that's Coke, Visa, Budweiser, McDonald's, Adidas. And now that it's in America, there's even going to be more American companies that want to get involved in this. Nike's going to be there. It could be a chance for Under Armour to sponsor a team, spend a little bit of money, because this year, once again, they did not have a presence at the World Cup. But as I was saying before, 8 years from now, we're already talking about cord cutting and YouTube TV and Hulu and Amazon's getting rights to live sporting events. It's going to be crazy how different television looks in 8 years. So just the fact that Fox has these rights, no matter how people are watching TV in 8 years, Fox is the big winner here, and as well as Telemundo. And then I want to quickly go over just a little bit of what the World Cup will look like here in North America in 2026, because even though it's a joint bid between Canada, Mexico, and the United States, Canada and Mexico will each only get 10 games total. I mean, so 10 in Canada, 10 in Mexico. The United States gets 60. There's only three cities in Mexico and Canada that are even candidates, where the rest is going to be in the United States. The only options for the where they would host the final are either Dallas, Los Angeles, or New York / New Jersey, which makes sense. They have big stadiums. But yeah, so that just for any confusion, it's not like it's going to be completely a third spread out like that. And then this is also it might shock some people. It didn't really shock me at all that the officials and the people who put out this bid expect the big six games, which would be the first three games in all of the countries. So the first game in Mexico, first game in Canada, first game in the United States, and then the two semifinals and the finals, to have as much ticket sales and money-making potential and economic impact as a Super Bowl. So six Super Bowls in a month-long period in North America. They expect about $5.8 billion in total ticket sales over that month-long tournament in the United States. And before we go on to the next topic, I want to talk maybe more than briefly about soccer, because it's going to seem like I'm a huge fanboy and it's just going to seem, I don't know, that I care too much about this. I like soccer. It's not like I grew up playing soccer my whole life and I have some vested interest in you caring about soccer, but I want to lay out the case for why I think, for a sport that we've talked about since the early 90s, it's been the sport of the future in America, and you can say that hasn't really come to fruition. I think within the next 8 years, next 10 years, 15 years, it's really a sport that is made for how we consume content now. I think if anything, you might not agree with how the sport looks aesthetically or the score or anything like that. But I mean, think about how you watch television now, and especially how young people, the games are 90 minutes, 45 minute halves. So there's no commercial breaks during the action for those halves. Whereas the NFL is a commercial break every 5 minutes. There's 11 minutes of action in a 3 hour plus television production. So going forward, do you think a lot of kids who grew up never seeing a commercial in their lives are going to start tuning into something where it's 3.5 hours long and 2 hours of it is commercials? I personally don't think so. I mean, obviously the NFL is going to remain dominant for a while, but I think that soccer is just a perfect sport for modern consumption. I mean, this might sound a little weird. I even voluntarily watched the NBA Finals on tape delay, just turned off my phone so I could fast forward through the commercials. And then a quick little note just about a lot of people say that soccer, especially in America, that it's not high scoring enough, and they'll say that the NFL is really high scoring. But an NFL score that's 28-21 is really just 4-3 because they just artificially made a touchdown worth 7 points. Well, 6 plus the extra point. So it's not like the NFL is some massively, massively high scoring game compared to soccer. You could easily have a 4-3 soccer game. I mean, Russia won the first game of the World Cup 5-0. So I just wanted to get that a little bit out of the way. And then also, the money is where athletes are going to go, and the money is slowly pouring into Major League Soccer. You had 12 teams in the MLS back in 1998. By the time the U.S. hosts the World Cup in 2026, you're going to have 28 teams. This past year, they just added a new team, Los Angeles FC. There's already a team in Los Angeles. They're adding 3 more teams next year. Miami, Nashville, and Cincinnati is the most recent team. David Beckham is a big part of the Miami team that's coming down to South Beach. The expansion fees to get one of these teams is $150 million, which is going to seem, I guarantee you, it's going to seem really cheap in a decade, that you have all of these guys who own other big sports teams in the NFL and the NBA that are just saying, this is a bargain. I mean, when you think that live sports are going to be the only thing that advertisers care about and marketing cares about in 10 years, why would you not? I mean, $150 million is nothing to these people. NBA teams are going for $2 billion. I mean, it's really just pretty mind-blowing. But I just want to, I just wanted to briefly talk about why I think that soccer has a chance to finally really become a sport that is what people, so many people who love the sport have talked about, that it's going to be what a lot of young Americans start to grow up with. And I think just how the game is played on television in that short format is really one of, if not the biggest, I think it's maybe one of the biggest reasons going forward. And as I mentioned with this MLS expansion, all of these teams are coming from somewhere, and most of them are coming from the United States Soccer League, which is directly below Major League Soccer, and they're affiliated with Major League Soccer, the only minor league soccer league that's like that in the United States. And this is going to help me transition into my sports betting topic, because Vegas just got their first USL team, and so they're called the Las Vegas Lights FC. Actually, I have a really cool logo. Look it up. It's kind of a Miami Vice vibe. But they just signed a deal in their first season with William Hill. So that's a English sports betting publicly traded company. And the idea is that it's going to be the official betting app of the team, and you're going to be able to live bet all of these games in the stadium or on the app. And I think that that is really something that's going to happen going forward as sports betting goes all over America, is that these teams are going to get approached by companies like William Hill and say, we'll be your official sponsor of people betting now on all of these games live from the stadium or from their couch, because that's where all of the betting is going, is this live in-game betting from your phone. So this is what you should expect when the Raiders show up in Vegas in 2020. The Golden Knights were there this season in the NHL, and that's really, as I said, what you're going to expect to see, is these partnerships between gambling companies and the teams themselves, which is what you have in Europe and all over the rest of the world besides the United States. And now I want to get into my sports betting update, because the last time I talked about sports betting on this podcast, the Supreme Court ruling had just come down. And so we were kind of speculating about what it was going to look like and who were going to be the first states to adopt this. And the first state to actually take sports bets was Delaware, not New Jersey, which is kind of funny because New Jersey was the state that kind of made this all happen. So you had Delaware taking bets a couple weeks ago as the first state outside of Nevada to take legal sports bets. But then last Thursday, on the morning of the World Cup, New Jersey finally had its inaugural legalized sports betting at Monmouth Park in New Jersey. It's a sports betting track. So the racetrack actually built a sports book / sports bar back in 2014 in the hopes that this would eventually become legal. And then 4 years later, almost to the day, they took their first legal sports bets. Executives at that racetrack think that once it gets into its groove, its maturity, they can bring in $1 billion in sports bets at that place alone a year, which I don't know how reasonable that is, but that's their estimates. And New Jersey as a state thinks that it could make about $250 million right away on sports betting revenue by taxing it. And this is actually really funny. So the first person to take or make a legal sports bet in the state of New Jersey was the governor, Phil Murphy. He placed a $20 bet on Germany to win this year's World Cup and a $20 future bet on the New Jersey Devils to win the 2019 Stanley Cup. So we'll see if any of those happen. Germany could happen. I really doubt the Devils are going to win, but it's $20. It was a symbolic gesture, and it's just sort of a start of a new era. It's like he's cutting the rope at a new building. So I thought that was just pretty funny. And then you also had DraftKings. They officially applied for a sports betting license in New Jersey. They partnered with a company called Resorts Casino Hotel to satisfy the state's requirement. They need to have, if you're not based in that state, they're going to have you, and this might be only specific to New Jersey, but you're going to have to partner with a New Jersey-based company to have a sports betting license. So if you have William Hill or any of these big companies like Wynn or MGM come in, they will have to have either roots in New Jersey or partner with some local New Jersey business. And then I kind of just want to briefly talk again about what this future of sports betting is going to look like. And it's going to look a lot like what DraftKings is doing right now, is applying for sports betting licenses and then just start bringing out mobile apps and everything like that. So you have Microsoft, Sony, and some other financial firms that have patent applications for sports betting apps. There's talk of places like Google getting into it. And I'm not saying for sure that these big companies are going to want to be at least out in the public saying they're involved in sports betting, because for as much as a lot of people love it, there's also a lot of people on the other side of it that say this is bad. It's just going to have more people become addicted to gambling, because it's like the lottery where sports gambling, 30% or so of the people that are generating this revenue or making all the bets are a small amount of people who are addicted to it. So that's not a good thing, but I don't want to get too much into that at all. And then you could easily see companies, as I said, Twitter, Facebook, just then go buy these little apps, because it would not be that hard for all of these companies to, I mean, there's freshmen at Stanford or MIT that could make a sports betting app in a weekend. And I think that's really what you're going to see, is you're going to see these big companies quietly just buy up all these sports betting apps, because it's legal and it's going to slowly become more accepted, no matter if some people like it or not. You already have 20 other states lined up to pass their own legalized sports gambling laws soon enough. So it'll be really fun to watch how this plays out, because it's already happening really fast. And then I also want to encourage anyone who, you might still doubt me about this soccer thing, but this upcoming weekend, maybe watch a World Cup match on Fox. This weekend slate's not the best. You have one of the favorites, Germany, is playing Sweden at 11 a.m. Eastern on Saturday on Fox. Then England plays Sunday morning. If you don't want to watch any of those games, the weekday games are a little harder because most of them are during the work week. You can wait till the knockout stages and catch a big game because it'll be really fun. And I think it's just worth, if you've never watched a World Cup game and you say you hate soccer or you don't see how anyone likes it, just watch it and then you can say it, because if you don't ever try something, you can't say you don't like it. But that does it for another episode of Full Court Finance. Until next time, I'm your host, Ben Raines. And remember, as always, if you have any questions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com.